Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and today's show is titled Archetypes. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room during next week's show, as well as posted on my website within a day or so of this show. We encourage and welcome your questions. Spirituality is all about evolving into a higher state of consciousness. This may be easy to say, but we all know how bewildering the process of life can be. So today we're going to talk about ways to break the problem up into bite-sized pieces. This can give us additional insight into the day-to-day problems we are wrestling with, as well as provide us with a better concept of where we stand in our evolutionary process. In so doing, we can see which issues are active in our life, and maybe even the priorities we will be dealing with in the future. Our life challenges will be much easier to accept if we understand why they are important for us and understand that they too will soon pass. Our guest today is Carol Pearson, author of Awakening the Heroes Within and Persephone Rising, Awakening the Heroine Within. Dr. Pearson received a PhD in English from Rice University and a doctorate of ministry from Wisdom University. Besides being an author, she's a speaker, workshop leader, and educator. She is best known as an expert on the applications of myths, archetypes, and a narrative to contemporary life and work. Carol Pearson, welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you.
How did you get into studying and working with archetypes?
Well, actually, I was a graduate student in a PhD student in English rather than psychology. And I was in a program that looked at archetypal patterns in literature. And when I was reading Jung and Campbell and a lot of the major figures in the field of talking about archetypes and depth psychology, I felt like I was just home. And so over time, I moved my focus from literature to people's lives. But why I'm glad I got a PhD in literature is that it taught me to read stories in a very deep way. So much of my work is about narrative intelligence, understanding the stories we're living, the stories we're thinking, the stories going on around us in the world, and what movie we're in any given time.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's try to set the stage for our listeners, because you have some pretty intricate concepts in your book, Awakening the Heroes Within. They're intricate for an hour's radio show, and I want to make sure that our listeners understand where you're coming from, and so we're going to work our way through this.
Okay. But
as I understand it, your concept is that the ultimate purpose of existence is spiritual evolution, and in each life we work towards that goal. And this spiritual evolution is the process of evolving our consciousness, which is in this life manifested as our personality. Mm-hmm. So you see life as a journey, not a destination.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's a big deal. To me, that's a big deal, because it says that our lives have a meaning and a purpose. And the key is we need to find out what that meaning and purpose is, which is what your book, Awakening the Heroes Within, is all about. Why are we heroes?
Well, in my view, a hero is a person who is true to their purpose, true to why they're here, and what it is they need to learn. But they're not just looking for their own happiness. Yes, of course, we all want to be happy. We want to be fulfilled. And that's important and not wrong for spirituality. I'm not in the category of let's all be miserable. But it's also about caring about the world and about other people. Most of the religions of the world tell us to love our neighbor as ourselves in different kind of language. And that means loving ourselves enough to be true and really true to ourselves, as we also love other people and find a way to balance those qualities. And it also means the archetypes come in terms of, well, some archetypes might be closer to one person's purpose than another. But also the 12 archetypes I talk about are almost like building blocks. Every time we live the story of one of these archetypes, we gain a virtue that's, it can be a very practical virtue, but at a higher level, it's a spiritual virtue. And it moves us along our path, but it also helps us to fulfill our mission and purpose in life, whatever our calling is, and to be successful in what we do.
Yeah. You know, when I read your book, and I read it, and I really enjoyed it, when I looked at heroes, I thought of it, you know, life is hard. It's really, really hard.
Uh-huh.
And we've come a long way. Everybody, if you've gotten to the point that you can listen to this radio show, and really, if you can exist on this earth as a human being, you've come a long way. And you kind of are a hero, you know, because you've overcome so many things. And we don't see that because we only look at a little tiny snapshot of our life. And we are always suffering, it seems, with the latest aggravation that whether it's some guy pulling in front of us on the road, or the bus saying we didn't do a very good job, or getting a leak in the roof or whatever. And we don't realize exactly how hard this life is and how far we've come. And I think there is a huge hero in that.
Yeah. You know, so many people think that the hero is somebody who jumps in the river and saves somebody, or goes to war and risks their life. And I think that takes us away from realizing that, no, we're all heroes and we all deal with our own challenges. But that all of these archetypal patterns require us to have courage. And what's fundamental to the hero is that courage. And that can be the courage to leave a bad marriage. That can be a courage to stay up all night when you're just exhausted with a sick child, or deal with the fact that they have to have an operation and they're only two. There are all kinds of, it can be the courage to really think deeply and to see what you see and know what you know.
Yeah, I agree. Uh-huh. What's an archetype? You know, people don't walk around talking about archetypes, you know, day to day. What is an archetype?
Oh, a lot of people I know do.
Okay. Well, you hang around with a different group tonight.
Maybe our listeners will.
Okay.
Archetypes are universal characters, images, and narratives, stories, basically, that recur in every culture, in every time. And so that we can guess or conclude that they're natural to the human psyche. Carl Jung, who came up with a lot of the basic ideas I work with, wonderful psychologist, said they're the human equivalent of instincts. They kick in when we need them. You know, for example, the lover archetype kicks in when you fall in love. And you may never have lived a love story before, but or acted in the, you know, in a romantic way before, and all of a sudden you're doing it. You know, it's happening, and it's like your psyche is saying, okay, here's the story you're in now. And in any of these archetypes, there's an evolution where, in lover, for example, you could live the love story at the level of a romantic love, but you could also end up living the love story at as a mystic, you know, loving God and loving everybody, And so that there's an evolution within these, they're the same basic patterns, but there's an evolution within that you often see, and you think about the poetry of Rumi or many mystical spiritual people, that they use very romantic, even sexual sometimes language in talking about their faith and about God. And you can see that that pattern has essentially evolved in them.
Okay. Now, before we get into the details of the various archetypes, what type of information can we hope to derive from an analysis of our archetypes? What can people get out of it? You know, what are they going to understand better about themselves?
Well, they can understand that, for example, when I said, what movie am I in? sometimes, for example, I just talked about the lover, and I'll just refer to these archetypes, you know, when it's in context of your question. The lover archetype might kick in romance, and then you get married and you have a kid, and your caregiver, you need your caregiver to take care of this child. And some people, it just kicks in naturally, and suddenly you're willing to sacrifice for the child, and you're willing to learn all of the skills you need to take care of somebody very fragile, and you gain that kind of skill. And sometimes there's a situation where somebody doesn't really like the idea of being a caregiver, and they kind of resist the story, but then they realize, wait a minute, this is a story of men. You know, I asked for this. This is a story of men.
We can understand ourselves better. We can understand what we're going through better if we understand the process. And as a result, it makes life a little bit easier, and we can be happier as we're given all these difficult challenges in life.
Right. And there's another thing that's equally important. You know, in neuroscience now, they say that we don't see the world as it is. We see the world through the filters. Our consciousness has a kind of like filters, lenses that we see them through. And these filters are often the stories that we're unconsciously living. And so sometimes, I talked about lover and caregiver. Let's say you have those archetypes. You're really good at that. Of those archetypes, you have them. That's just how you see the world. You walk into a room and you look at who needs something, or who is attractive. And then suddenly you're in a war story. I mean, you're really in a war story. Somebody is taking legal action against you. Your boss is threatening to fire you.
Right.
You really have to defend yourself in some kind of way. And you can be stuck in your patterns of always that, okay, what I do is always be caring, always be loving. And wait a minute, no, I'm in another story. So it also helps us wake up to peek past our habitual ways of seeing what's going on, to rise to the occasion. And the really cool thing about this is, since these are really archetypes, and that means they're human instincts, all of them are in us, and we can awaken them. That's why it's awakening them, in order to meet challenges that we never thought we'd have.
Okay, let's go through the 12 that now these 12. Did you decide that this, or did you take them from Carl Jung, or where did they come from?
Well, the idea of archetypes came from Carl Jung, and he talked about a few of these, but no, these were one. This is where my literary background, excuse me, my literary background really helped me, because I could see ones, archetypes that recurred in literature and art over time, and which reassured me that they are in fact archetypes. And I could also, the way that I categorized them and the way I chose the ones I wanted to talk about were ones that were helpful for this spiritual journey, and also the journey just simply to be a really mature human being, and that were associated with success and fulfillment in the contemporary world. Now, the contemporary world is not just this year, but modern life.
Now let's go through them so people can understand what, you know, what we're talking about when we talk about these archetypes of our consciousness and our psyche. So why don't you go through them and explain in a little bit of detail so people understand what you're talking about.
Okay.
Do you have them in front of you, or do you want me to?
I know.
You know them by heart.
I know them pretty well.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm going to organize them the way that I do in Awakening the Heroes with them, but I actually organize them differently sometimes in other books. The first four are, because this is a developmental journey in Awakening the Heroes Within, and the first four are associated with potentially early life, although they can be active at any time, and they're a version of the constellation of the family. There's the innocent archetype, which has the quality of faith and trust and joy in life, but it's also it's like a spontaneous, innocent, happy child. And its pair is the orphan archetype, which feels sometimes like a motherless child. And this could be literally an orphan, but archetypally, any of us can feel sometimes orphaned when other people don't get it, don't understand us, don't mirror us very well in terms of who we think we are, abandon us, betray us, and all the ways that our parents and other authority figures were imperfect and didn't meet all our needs. So you have two sides of the inner child. And then you have two sides of the inner parent, the warrior who will fight for you and keep the boundaries and make you behave, and the caregiver who's the nurturer. And for those four archetypes help us create a strong ego. And I don't mean egotism, I mean the kind of ego that helps us to be able to succeed in the world. And they're kind of fundamental to do anything in the world well. The innocent gives us the optimism, the orphan the realism, the warrior toughness, and the caregiver love makes us, you know, basically, you know, you say you have all that at 20, then you're good to go. the next four go deeper. They're really related to more of a soul journey of initiation. And the seeker, generally the call to this part of the journey is that you suddenly feel trapped, unhappy, this isn't great, there must be some better place, there must be something better here. You can feel this very early in life, or you can wait till midlife and have a midlife crisis. But it is telling you that there is something more for you, there's something better for you, most likely, and to go seek it. And the seeker is looking for what in the world outside me, and it could be through travel, it could be through reading, it could be through trying new things, it really satisfies me and feels right for who I am. So it's adventurous, but it's also identity seeking. Who am I? What is my purpose? And the balance for that one is the lover, because, which I've already talked about, so I'll be quick here, the lover is much more about, I want to practically merge with other people. I want to be so in love with them. But it's also about following what you love and finding what you love. And they balance each other. And then there's one that seems kind of scary to a lot of people, but is sometimes the most powerful learning that comes from this system, which is the destroyer archetype. And that's, it's about a death in a way, the death of parts of ourself when things that we thought were essential to ourselves are ripped from us. And that can be illness, it can be the loss of a marriage, a child, sometimes even huge business failure, whatever you thought, whatever any of us thought we were, we had to have to be us. It can sometimes be somebody thinks that they've found their purpose in life and they can't do it in the way that they expected. And this is a process of emptying out and learning to let go. And it is a lot about faith. It's very, very important to people sometimes when they're going through experiences of tremendous loss to realize I'm in a destroyer story. And the destroyer story is really about metamorphosis, that your experiences are asking you to change in a radical way, not necessarily because you've done anything wrong or there's anything wrong with who you've been, but you're ready for something else. And it's and that paves the way for the creator. And the creator can be like an artist. It can be any of us expressing ourselves in art or literature or creating a new product, whatever we do, or painting our house. But it's also about the process of recreating our life when we've had loss. And as a soul journey, it is around learning that we can trust that process in little ways and big ways. That when we experience loss, we can recreate our lives. We can continually recreate, continually have faith in our that capacity within us of imagination to know what to do next. Okay. And then the last four are the archetypes of the royal court, and they're about living life royally. And that is a balance of having found yourself in the soul journey. You find yourself in four ways. I mean, you find yourself by seeking, going and looking for it, by finding what you love, by letting go of what is taken from you, and sometimes what you let go of and want to, and then what you create. And from that, most people can find a much clearer sense of their purpose and who they are. Not for once and for all, because I think all of that changes over time, but for the time that you're in. And the last four, which I said are the ruler, living royally. There's the ruler, and that's about taking charge of our lives and not living by other people's rules, but setting your own. Kind of like you were the king and or the queen, and you got to decide what the rules are. It's really claiming that power, but also the power. A ruler has responsibilities to meet your responsibilities, to have a bigger focus than just your own life and looking at the society, looking at the world around you, and helping to make it work. The balance for the magician is, for the ruler is a magician. The magician is like Merlin to King Arthur. And that's the archetype of being able to transform your life by transforming your consciousness and understanding that process and also applying the principles of ritual and to help groups change their consciousness and therefore change what happens. It's also visionary, moving people together and one's own self by a vision of the future. And then that leads the last two are the sage and the fool. The fool is, in other places I talk about it, the fool is the court jester. The sage is about finding wisdom and that constant curiosity and desire to know more. That can be expertise in a very intellectual way, but ultimately wisdom connects the head and the heart to find deep wisdom about spirituality and about how the world works. And then there's the last one in the system is the jester who finds joy and who can see the humor in things and having a good time, which is pretty important to be able to truly love life. The great theologian Matthew Fox talks about via positiva and just wonder about the joy of the world, the beauty of the world. And that's part of the gesture too, helping others to find joy.
Okay. Now, one of the things you do, you lump them into those 12 into three sets of four, and that's a way to look at, I guess, our long term or I guess not just long term, but our life's journey, if you will,
right,
as a way to divide it. But you divide them into other things too. And one of the things that you do is you set up three stages of the journey. Talk to us about the three stages of the journey. This is the preparation, the journey, and the return.
Thanks. I needed that.
I thought you
might. The preparation is the ego development, and it's getting ready. It's getting a clear enough sense of yourself. Clear enough boundaries so that you're not doing what everybody else wants, clear enough, opening your heart so that you're a decent, caring person, not being an orphan all the time, but connecting up with your innocence and not being in denial all the time. That's the preparation. And the journey, as I talk about it there, is the soul journey. That's when it's really about these archetypes helping you to become more self-aware, to find yourself at a deeper level. And the return is to bring what you've learned and express it in some way for the good of the world. Which is, if you start knowing what you're good at and what you love and you want to do, and, in our culture, there's so many people who are into a kind of meritocracy and, some people are successful and they're important and then they're ordinary people and they're not important and they may even be losers. But this whole way of thinking archetypally and in depth psychology is we all matter. And so once we find what we're good at, what we're able to do, what we do that matters to other people, and we can see the difference it makes, then that's when we move into the return. If we can fail to return, if we don't think we're good enough, if we underestimate our talents, because maybe they don't get paid as well as some other talent, although it's always good to figure out a way to get paid well, but so many people hold back, and if they hold back, then they're not giving what they're here to give. And the hero's journey is having the courage to face failure, to not be good enough, but then to learn more and be better as the way we live our lives, and not let failure or loss or whatever happens to us stop wanting to contribute. So those two ways that I've talked about kind of go together. But I would also say that in this book, I'm talking about a developmental model, but each one of these archetypes can also operate singly in the sense that it can be there at any time of your life. They help with that developmental journey, but they also have other purposes. There are people, when I was growing up, Dick Turpis, who lived around the corner and was the dad of a friend of mine, a little girl that was my buddy, he just lived a warrior life. I mean, he was always, he was the big, tough guy. He didn't even sleep on the bed. He slept on the floor. He thought only sissies slept on the bed.
All right.
So we have people, and I have a friend now who, her whole life is caregiver. I mean, that's probably an exaggeration, but what I see is that she's always caring about somebody. And she's made a huge difference in all kinds of movements for the disabled, for the homeless, for racial minorities. And, you know, she just got the biggest heart, and the caregiver story of giving and helping people is what she lives all the time. Okay. So these archetypes can sometimes also be a clue to your calling.
Now, what I particularly liked, one of the concepts I particularly liked, was spiraling upward as we evolve. And your point was that we don't develop any one of these archetypes fully at any one time. It's a process, and it's
right.
A process as we go through. We do better at one, and then we end up bring another one of the archetypes up to speed. So we work on that one, and we get that up, and all of a sudden it's find out it's ahead of maybe another aspect of our consciousness. So we have to go build that up, and then all of a sudden we get around to the first one again, and we find out that that's now lower than the others, and we have to work on that. And that's how we evolve, and it's a long process. You do it in your life, but you also do it life after life after life. Why don't you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I never talked in the book about life after life after life, but I do think that's true. It isn't this, I mean, some people have an instrument called the Pearson-Marr Archetype Indicator, where you can find out what archetype is. You get scores on how much of one archetype you have in another. And sometimes people that have taken that get very conscious in the way you talked about, well, I know I need a little bit more of this archetype, and I'll develop it by doing what the archetype does, by being conscious of it, by maybe looking at somebody who I think has mastery in that archetype and is just like I'd like to be, and learning from them. Either you don't even have to know them to learn from them. You can learn from the example. But for most people who aren't taking an instrument or maybe don't know the system that well, the process that the spiral process that you described happens more organically. That is, you know, you, let's say ruler, you know, ruler, you start, even though I talked about it as far along on the journey, well, learning to do your homework on your own is beginning to have ruler. I mean, you're kind of responsible, you're doing it yourself. And, you know, and as you find yourself, you're in your first job and you have to have your own apartment and do all the things that maybe mommy or daddy or somebody did for you. There's another level of it. And being organized at work, maybe you get promoted and all of a sudden, wait a minute, you're the boss. Ooh. And you have to be in charge of other people, or you're the parent and you have to say, go to your room. Then they're just the spiraling often just simply happens because of new challenges as they emerge in your life.
Yeah, as opposed to saying, hey, yeah, I really need to work on this. They
right.
just kind of happen. Right.
But it is helpful to recognize it. Particularly, I'm thinking of a coaching client I had once who said I could tell this story. She got promotion to be the boss. Not the biggest boss, but a boss. And she froze because she had a father who was very autocratic, and she thought, I'll never be like that. And in that way, she kind of, she didn't just decide she would never be to be bossy like that and a little mean. She was gonna get rid of that, not have anything to do with that archetype at all. So she was just really sweet all the time. And there she was actually having to manage people. And so sometimes what happens with those challenges is we have a resistance because of some experience we have a resistance to a natural archetypal process. And that's the time it's really essential to become self-aware and to be aware of what archetypal story we've just entered in a new way. And so she had to do some work on being conscious of for her, female models of people, of women who were living a ruler story. I think she liked, she picked out Hillary as one of her models. And so that she could find a way to live that story in a way that made her successful in her job. And to, you know, and not be held back by a decision, you know, that she made when she was 7 years old. And, you know, 7-year-old decisions are often pretty blanket and not very nuanced.
Right.
So, you know, some of this happens, even if we're not conscious. The danger of not being conscious and not being able to say, hey, you know, that's my creator, that's my ruler, that's my magician, whatever it is. The danger of that is that these archetypes can all have a temptation with them and a negative side.
And that's what you call the shadow.
The shadow archetype. Yeah. Okay. And the more unconscious we are of them, the more they can run us, and we have no idea what's getting us in all this trouble or just what's hurting other people. So, you know, the warrior can be ruthless, the lover can be promiscuous, the creator can create messes, the magician can become like Jim Jones, you know, and manipulate people.
Okay. So, and so as you go, there's the negative side, which is the shadow side. And then you have things like, you start out with the call, and then you say level 1 and level 2 and level 3, and they're just, you know, kind of arbitrary things, but they give you an example of how as you evolve through this, each one of these archetypes, you get more sophisticated and you understand it and you develop it a little more as you go in your spiral, if you will. Spiral.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. I thought it was really good the way you did that.
Yeah. And I liked also the way you put it, because it's not like you have to do it exactly this way and that everybody is on this program that's so specific. It's really to give a sense of what it might look like.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you break up architects, you characterize them differently. You say there is a goal, a fear, a problem, response to a task, a gift. What's that all about?
Well, it's a way of getting the stories, making the stories clear to people. You know, it's a story has a plot line. You know, so if you think about the standard, you know, sort of fairy tale, you know, you have a hero, goes out with a sword, meets a dragon, does something. One of my favorite kids' stories: the dragon is hero is a little frog with a little bitty sword, and he actually is very creative, and he has a lot of sage, and he's never going to be able to kill the dragon that's burning the villages. But he talks the dragon, instead of burning the villages, to burn the town garbage. you know that. When you're looking at, okay, what's the dragon? You know, what's the dragon is the problem. And then there's a strategy, and that is what different archetypes have different strategies. You know, the sage always wants to learn more. I will think it. I will figure it out. The caregiver assumes that, you know, if it's a dragon, you take the thorn out of its paw and love it and it gets nicer. Seekers says, dragon, I'm out of here. And the orphan actually says, the dragon, this is too big for me. I hope somebody comes and helps.
All right. So we have different perspectives on a problem. Uh-huh. And which perspective we use is whichever archetype happens to be the strongest in that particular circumstance, I guess, that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, that's perfect. And sometimes it works. And if it doesn't work, the great thing to know is you can try another one.
All right. Now you've also, you set these archetypes up in pairings. What was that all about? You have a pairing of security, and you put innocent and orphan in it, and an identity and mm-hmm. responsibility. What is that all about?
Well, the pairings in the book, and I when I went through them in the 12, I kind of mentioned that this one kind of is the balance to that one. What it's about is that the one that's the pair, actually provides a complementary set of abilities. So the caregiver and the ruler, I mean the caregiver and the warrior are a pair. And you can think about if you have too much warrior and you don't have any caregiver, you can be really end up really ruthless,
right?
You know, and if you have a lot of caregiver and no warrior, people can run all over you, and you'll be a martyr. You'll give your life away. There's a classic photograph, but there's many versions of it, of a soldier who's carrying a child to a hospital that's been hurt in battle. And it's a wonderful picture of the heroic version of when you have the warrior caregiver combination. And many people who we think of as particularly ideal people have that. They have the toughness of the warrior, and they can really go for what they want and fight for what they want, and the kindness and the nurturing quality of the caregiver. It makes a very, very fine person. And similarly with the seeker and the lover, the seeker would just be seeking all the time. Seekers are always looking and saying, no, 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 it's not good enough for me. It's not what I really want. It doesn't fulfill me. It isn't so perfect. And they can end up quite alone. And the lover can end up wanting to be close so much that they lose their identity and become almost part of the other person, living to please. And together, you can have somebody who can be in a love relationship but has a very firm sense also of their personal identity and what they want to do, which can be extremely healthy.
Now you say that we can integrate these pairs or we can conflict them.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, they can fight with each other. Well, sometimes the conflict is in ourselves. Sometimes the conflict is in with other people. I've had people write letters saying I saved their marriage, or this book did. When one was in lover and the other was in seeker. Why are you always leaving me? Why are you so clingy? But they can be conflicting inside of us too when we, you know, it's natural. All these archetypes have motivations that are human and natural to human beings. So we all want to go our own way and have our own way and find out who we are and differentiate ourselves. That's more seeker. And we all want love. We may or may not want to be paired, but we all want love, and we all want to have a life we love. So we can feel pulled between the two. So moving back to say in this married couple, it's generally more complicated than what I said before. One might be holding one pole and the other, but both probably have the tension inside between wanting independence and wanting bonding and closeness.
Okay. Now you also say that these pairs can evolve over a lifetime. You give examples of, you know, how we change from childhood to young adult, to midlife, to maturity, to old age. You know, talk about that a little bit. How do we evolve in a lifetime?
In the pairs?
Yeah, in the pairs.
Yeah. Yeah, well, just staying with this, the seeker and lover, often the tension between them is toughest when you're young. And it can be toughest at any time. Let's say in the classic midlife crisis, you may suddenly have a lot of seeker or fall in love with somebody that you're not married to or in a committed relationship with, that can be problematical, but it can also be because you're in a huge change process. And the in those particular two, they're both really about identity. I mean, because we find out who we are by seeking and by differentiating from other people. I'm not that, I'm not that, I'm not that. But we also find out who we are by what we love and what we are willing to commit to. And that particularly as we grow older, if our life has worked well in that particular duality, we may not feel much conflict at all. We know who we are. And part of that is what's distinctive about us, but part of that is all the people we love that are in our life, the work that we might have found that we really love doing, a spiritual path that feels absolutely right to us. And at that point, the seeker, there's no conflict. They're really integrated.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that I think you pointed out in the book, but you know, you can certainly see it, is even our cultures seem to evoke archetypes.
Yes.
You know, and for an example, you know, I find it interesting that different factions seem to be focused on different archetypes. And politics is, well, it's in the news all the time, and for better or for worse. And it's, you know, clearly, you know, the conservatives and the liberals seem to have very different agendas they're working on. Do you think these are because these are the type of people that are working on one kind of archetype and versus the other, or do you think these are just mostly selfish people, selfishly motivated people?
No, I actually do. Well, you know, their candidates have to fit their party profile to some degree. I guess they used to. Now Trump is
right.
But no, in political parties and candidates, and also just in companies and groups of various kinds where people come together, very often they are working on similar archetypes, and they have different filters through which they see the world.
Yeah.
And right now it seems like the media, a lot of the media has warrior and jester as their dominant. They like things that are entertaining, and they like fights, you know, so that's what they cover. But that isn't because they're not trying to do things well. It's because that's where their consciousness is, and that's where they think the American people's consciousness is, and which may be true. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. But it's more than just politics, isn't it? It's gender, it's ethnicity, it's religion, it's race, it's company to company, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. And that's, you know, it's a huge issue. I think there could be more tolerance in politics.
Which one of the archetypes is that?
Oh yeah, I've got a lot of sage. always wanting people to be able to have a civil conversation and learn from one another. That's my way of seeing the world, or one of my ways of seeing the world. You know, you can see, by the way, that Obama has a lot of sage. But it's not terribly popular. You know, the sage is not popular with the American people.
No.
The Democrats are a little more warrior. You know, Republicans have a little more caregiver. There's a tension in our system itself between democracy, which is actually not the every person archetype that's not in the system, although it's related to the system. where everybody counts, and capitalism, which is much more financially a meritocracy, and you count more based on how well you do.
Right.
There's a tension in our whole system.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
What do you want people to take away from your book? What would you love? What is the single thing that you would like people to walk away from your book, having read it and get out of it?
Well, one, life can be simpler. I think I wrote this book because I always wish I had a operating manual for my life.
For your life?
Okay, that's good.
And I think understanding archetypes, and it is a common sense kind of spirituality, gives a toehold of having a sense, well, where am I and what's required of me here and what do I need to do? And what I hope people who read my books come away with is more confidence in their ability to live life in the complicated time that we have. And that they do have the all the abilities and the ways of seeing the world that they need within them, maybe not at any particular moment, but they have what they're gonna need for what shows up in their life is gonna be there. And I'm not talking externally; I mean internally.
Okay.
Although sometimes it's also true externally.
Now let me just say to the listeners that this book is not nearly as difficult to understand as you might think from all the information that we've given you during this radio show. It, 50 minutes is not an adequate time to understand the archetypes that you live with. But the book is very clear about it, and I would highly recommend that you go buy the book and digest it, and I think you'll absolutely get an awful lot out of it. Now, Carol, what are you doing now that you would like people to know about?
Well, one, I'd like to tell them there are two easier books, the hero Within and What Story Are You Living? And okay. They can find either one of them in my website, which is not hard to find. It's www.carolspearson.com. And they could find both of those that are even simpler than this book. Very easy to understand. I just have a new book out. It's called Persephone Rising. Just came back from Vietnam, where I was teaching police leadership and used some of these ideas. I've been, since I wrote Awakening the Heroes Within, I started doing much more work with organizations, with marketing, authentic marketing, not manipulation. I'm also feeling called to write a very spiritual book, but I can't talk about it yet.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, well, Carol, it was Carol Pearson. Thank you so much for being with us. You were a great, great guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your program. It seems like a really great program.
Thank you. Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from today's chat room will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com, along with those from previous shows. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.